You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's time for our player spotlight, and a pleasure to speak with this man who had a great game last night and a tremendous win. Running back Chris Carson is with us. Chris, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
Doing good. I'm curious what it was like, last night, because you guys played in a game where you've got enough history to understand that building would have been rumbling. You would have felt the crowd there last night with the way that game went. What was it? Because you're not getting any sort of crowd noise being pumped in there, right? So what was last night like in terms of the reactions?
It's almost like playing like a scrimmage. You know what I'm saying? That's the best way I can describe it, you know what I mean? It's without the fans being there, it's kind of silent, you know. Each team brings their own juice, and so it's kind of, it has like a practice vibe to it. But I mean, like you said, like the 12s were there, the place would have been rocking, so it was a blessing to get that win out.
Chris, you may not be able to tell me too many details, but there was kind of a little of a fracas there at the end. I was wondering what was going on. It seemed like at the end of that game, the Vikings and a couple of Seahawks got into it.
Just emotions getting up there. Yeah. People competing at a high level. You know what I'm saying? That's going to happen.
Chris, what are you going to do for your bye week?
Well, since we got to stay here for this COVID, I'm probably just going to be chilling. Get my body back right for sure, and stay lifting and everything like that is keeping my body fresh. So, needs this time to get back right, get back to 100%.
Hey, Chris, can you take us through the 29-yard touchdown run you had? Boy, you guys exploded in the third quarter, and I imagine that Harrison Smith isn't going to like watching a review of that play.
our running back coach tells us all the time, you know what I'm saying, put your foot in the ground and get vertical. Not to waste too much time going east and west. And so that's what I tried to do on that play. The offensive line did a great job. Tight ends, you know, clearing that lane out for me. And, you know what I'm saying, I seen the end zone. I know I wanted to get there because I knew once we get close to the red zone, you know, Russ is going to try to pass it. So I had to take every opportunity I can to get in there.
Hey, Chris, what's this season been like for you? I mean, the offense is throwing the ball a lot more than they've run it, yet you're becoming a primary receiver almost. I mean, your career high is 37 receptions. You've already got 21 through five games and a career high in receiving touchdowns with three. So it's not as if you're not a part of the offense, that you're just being used differently. What are you enjoying that? How do you feel about the offense so far through five games?
We're putting up points, you know what I mean? That's the main thing. We got a good formula going. Russ leading us, and I'm just trying to do anything I can to help win. And so, that's being more of a receiving back, catching the ball at the backfield more. Different aspects of the offense. You know, I'm here to do whatever I have to do.
Chris, I think I saw you try to jump over somebody in Miami. I thought that you promised your mom that you wouldn't do that anymore.
I cleared them.
No, I was saying, remember after what happened in Carolina, I thought you promised your mom that you wouldn't jump over because you ended up doing a flip in that game.
Oh, yeah. No, I did, but, she told me that it was a good play after I did it because I was kind of nervous afterwards, but she told me it was a good play, so I took it as, keep doing it. So, if opportunity presents itself again, I might have to do it again, but we'll see how that settles with her for a little bit.
Hey, Chris, how tough was it for you to play in Miami? Because you're coming off that twisted knee by Tristan Hill there. You were upset about that play. How difficult was it to get ready last Sunday?
That's a tough one. You know, it was kind of difficult, but like I said, my goal is this year is to play the whole season. You know what I mean? So I made it a point that no matter what, if I could fight through it, I'm going to fight through it. And so I felt like that was something I could fight through. So I just stuck it out.
Hey, as far as the game last night goes, Chris, what was it that the Vikings were doing in that first half and other parts of the game that defensively that seemed to be so effective? I mean, your guys' offense has been virtually unstoppable this season. And for whatever reason, it seemed like it had a hard time getting going last night. What did they do that was unique?
They did a good job. I don't know. They schemed us up pretty good, trying to take away the deep balls and everything like that. So I feel like we should have, you know, we got to keep running the ball, and that's going to open things up more. Started to do that, and, you know, plays started being made. So I feel like, you know, it just starts with running the ball. And, you know, as you've seen, when we started doing that more, things started to open up more. And the defense, the offense on the other side, the Vikings offense did a good job running the ball. Slowing down the clock. So we was on the field for the first half, three times. So we had limited reps. So it was kind of hard to get the offense going when they're not on the field for that long.
Hey, Chris, I love the way you answer questions, and you're just an old school guy. I really appreciate it. And let me ask you this: who else on the team is? Who are some of the other fellow old school guys like you?
I would say the old school guys, Bobby, KJ, a few I know, Diggs is old school, you know, there's a few of them, you know what I mean, there's a few of them.
Hey, Chris, we talk all the time on the show. We feel like you're a top five running back in the league, and I'm just wondering where you would rank yourself.
Top five. I know that for sure. You know, when I do the most I can with my opportunities I'm given, but I'm for sure top five. And that's not to sound cocky, it's just confidence in my ability.
And have you noticed about the running backs getting paid this year? Kamara got paid, Joe Mixon. I mean, McCaffrey tops the list. You take note of that and think ahead about what it might be like for you in the offseason?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I know I got to get to the offseason first, you know what I'm saying, staying healthy. Putting some good things on tape, so that's the thing I'm most. That's the thing that's most important right now. So everything else will take care of itself.
Hey, Chris, Dave called you old school, and I agree with him. I think it shows up especially when you score a touchdown. You're like Barry Sanders in that you just kind of hand the ball to the official, and you know you'll slap hands and with everybody. But you're not a guy. In this day and age, you hear a lot of players talking about their brand. I got to build my brand, and they'll be you know, really demonstrative. They'll come up with dances. They'll point to their name on the jersey, whatever. You're the opposite of that. Is that something that somebody taught you? Is that something you saw in another player that you admired? How did you come about just being the guy that you are now versus the way everybody else is?
Just growing up, my mom always taught me to be humble. You know what I'm saying? I like you've been there. And so I kind of took that approach. You know what I'm saying? I don't really care about the attention, the hype, all that. So that's why I don't really post too much on social media or anything like that. It's just playing ball, you know what I'm saying? My goal is to take care of my family. So that's the only thing I really care about. I'm not really too worried about my brand or, you know, building that, anything like that. So,
good for you on that.
Yeah, so that's just how I am. I mean, a lot of people always ask, like, why don't you ever show emotion? A lot of times I'm just so tired when I get to the end zone that I'm like, okay, I'm ready to get back to the sit down. So that's a big part of it too.
Yeah, that's smart, man. You conserve your energy there. So
yeah. Hey,
what's every year you add something. I mean, I think you came in, you were a physical runner, and then, you know, you jump over people. Then you start using your speed to the edge. This year, it's been your hands, I guess, that people have been talking about. Have you always had good hands? And because Pete was just raving about what a great receiver you are.
Yeah, I always had great hands. And something that stuck out to me was when that I was watching that when I got on the the NFL Top 100 list. And the guy, the announcer, had said something about, like, oh, his hands are not the greatest or something like that, or he has okay hands or something like that. And I kind of took offense to that. So I always thought of myself being somebody that has great hands as a running back, you know, as a receiver too. You know, it's just trying to keep building my game year and year, year after year, just to have no weaknesses.
Hey, Chris, I got a kick out of it. There was a Packers receiver that tweeted out something the other day saying, I don't care about your fantasy team. Just wondering about you, Chris. You probably get all kinds of questions about fantasy football. How do you feel about it?
I'm the same way. I don't really care. I'm just playing ball to take care of my family. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Fantasy, that's good for them and everything like that, but I'm not too worried about that.
Okay, and during last night's game, I think it was sometime after that 29-yard touchdown run, one of my kids, Stevie, turned to me and he said he had you on his team, but he traded you for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He traded you for the Kansas City running back. What would you like me to tell him about that?
Tell him next time don't make that same mistake. You know what I mean? Go ahead and try to get me back. So.
Okay.
Hey, Chris, as Dave said, you add something to your game every year. Did you have a plan going into this offseason that, hey, I want to work on, you know, pass catching. I want to work on this. I want to work on getting stronger, leaner, bigger, whatever. Did you have anything you worked on specifically in the offseason?
Ball security was probably the biggest thing, you know what I'm saying? That's something that kind of affected me last year a lot. And I knew as a running back, I can't do something like that. I can't be turning the ball over so much. So that was something I kind of try to focus on, just trying to find different ways that I can carry the ball, but also use my physicality at the same time. So that was probably the biggest thing. And then rehabbing, you know, I was coming off of the hip injury. So just trying to build my strength up, get stronger than what I was last year, and just keep elevating everything.
Hey, Chris, tell us a little bit about your relationship with the offensive line. I know this. O linemen love a back like you that will run through people and grind it out, and it gets them fired up. And talk about your relationship with the big guys up front.
Well, that's all love to them. You know what I mean? Without them, this whole train is not going. So everything starts up front with them. You know what I mean? They set the tone every day in practice. They set the tone in the games. And we feed off of them, you know what I'm saying? So it makes my job a lot more easy when I'm not getting touched until I get, you know, 4 yards down the field. And we lost a lot of guys from last year's team, the center, a couple guards and everything like that. But new guys came in and filled in right away and, you know, haven't lost a beat. And it's been great to have guys like that, like young guys stepping in as rookies, you know what I'm saying, balling out. So the sky's the limit. They're just going to keep going up.
The Seahawks posted a video of Pete Carroll with his "Can you win the game in the first quarter?" thing last night in the locker room. How fired up do you still get when you hear your coach? He's 69 years old and still bringing it, Chris.
Yeah, he brings more juice than anybody, I think. It's crazy how, you know, I'm not going to say how old he is, but how much older he is, and, you know, having that energy that he has, you know what I'm saying? It's just contagious, and it's good to have a head coach like that.
Hey, at this point, I know it's only 5 games into the season, but are you keeping an eye on what the teams around you in your division are doing, or are you just laser-focused on your next opponent?
I'm just laser-focused. I really don't even pay attention to anybody else. I kind of just focus on Seattle football, and then after Seattle football, that's it.
All right, Chris, last one for me. I think last time we asked you this, you you told us you were driving like what was basically a rental car, which I so love about you. You not spending your money on cars and stuff like that. What are you driving these days?
I got me a nice Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Okay.
Cost about $39,000. So that's kind of – that hit my pockets kind of – that was kind of big. I was not happy about having to buy that. I had previously had a car deal, so I was driving a free car. So that deal ran up, so I had to go get a car for the first time, and that kind of hit big.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, so I'm just trying to save up as much as possible.
Yeah, you do that, man. You're so much a man after my heart because I had the same thing. I was like, what? A car back in my day. It was like a car was like $19,000. You got to be kidding me. I'm not paying $19,000 for a car. Yeah. Well, good for you, man.
Hey, Chris, when you drove home in that Jeep Cherokee last night, what do you do? Do you watch a replay of the game or do you think to yourself, man, I played in the game. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah, I don't like looking at it until I got to watch film. And all right, bro. And so, you know, when I got home, I sat in the car for like 20 minutes just with the car on, just laying back. Like, I was exhausted to the point where I didn't want to get out the car, you know what I mean? So I usually do that after every game. Like, just sit in the car, my body's banged up, and then getting in the house takes about 5 or 6 minutes, getting up the stairs and everything like that. So it's a process.
You're still a young man, too. I mean, you're 26 years old.
I know, but my playing style is, hey, comes with the territory.
Yeah. Man, you're fun to watch, Chris. I love the way you run.
I appreciate that.
Hey, last one, Chris. You talked about just being focused on Seahawks football. Do you watch any other team, whether you're at home on Monday night football, Thursday night football, whenever it's on in your home, do you watch it or you try to stay away from it?
I stay away from it. I don't like thinking about football outside of football unless I got it, you know, besides studying and all that stuff. I don't like watching, like, Monday night football, Thursday night football. I don't watch any of it unless it's like the Super Bowl or something crazy like that. But other than that, I'm not watching football.
Wow. Well, Chris, congratulations on the season so far. The big win, 5-0, undefeated, is awesome. And now you get to rest up and heal up during the bye week. We wish you nothing but the best, and hopefully we're talking again soon.
So I appreciate that.
There you go. Chris Carson of your Seattle Seahawks. Today's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Michael's Automotive Group. And
hey, just, maybe they can give Chris a deal.
Michael's so Automotive funny to Group. Think. I mean, and he's going to be signing a big deal, whether it's here or elsewhere. He'll be making big fat chunk of cash, but
he's still going to complain about spending $39,000 on a car.
Yeah, he's like, man, that hit my pocket. I didn't like that. Like that, he's probably got. I mean, I can't even imagine the cars that are in that parking lot. We've seen them, the price tag on some of those things. I don't know what cars cost of that level.
Yeah,
you know, but there's probably $100,000 vehicles, maybe $200,000 vehicles in that lot. And,
well, I just, because what I got was a Ford Bronco. And I wanted, for whatever reason, I wanted the certain engine. I can't remember if it was like the 350 or something like that. And then I wanted gray interior and I wanted white. It ended up being the same Bronco that OJ.
Al Cowling was driving.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I want to say it was something like that. But yeah, there were guys that spent lots of money. But I had a F-150 that I was on loan for a while that had all the bells and whistles. It's like $70,000 or something like that.
Back when you were playing?
No, just recently.
Okay. I was going to say, back then.
I don't think you could spend $70,000 on a car back in my day. But, yeah, I had to have something other than – but I love that about Chris. I love that he's
frugal.
One time, I think he said I'm cheap one time, and I think I said, no, you're frugal. That's different, man. You're not cheap. Like, you tip well.
Saving money. He's about saving money. He didn't like spending that money on a car.
Good for him. He's making 2.1 this year. It's a raise from 600,000 last year, but he's going to get an even bigger raise at the end of this year.
Well, and what do you guys
get?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you guys. I mean, I'm looking at.
Let me ask you quickly. Sorry. Is he a top five back? Because he said, top five without question.
Well, you're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, I think he is.
Because
because you love
Chris. I love Chris Carson. So, no, I really think he's got – that was an amazing run last night. I mean, spinning out of – that's Harrison Smith.
That
guy's a pro bowler, man. I mean, so, yeah, I think he is. But, I mean, look at – you know, you mentioned the – do you pay him? How much do you pay him? Whatever, or Jim. Mixon, I don't know that much about Joe Mixon. But I don't think that he is as special as Chris Carson is. And the thing is that, like I said, he can beat people to the edge. He can run it up the middle. I mean, how many times does he get – how strong he is? He gets extra yardage. He can catch. I mean, it's just to me, he totally is. Now, of course, there's the concern over the injuries. But really, I mean, it was two games last year. It was two games the year before. And then his rookie year, he got hurt in, what, game five, I think? He broke his leg. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was he was doing so well at that point, too. So – you know, that's my only concern. But, I mean, don't you think, I don't know about you guys, if you're paying Joe Mixon $12, $13 million, I'd pay Chris Carson that.
Yeah, Mixon's 24, just turned 24 in July. He's gone over 1,000 yards the past two seasons, 1,168, 1,137.
Just like Carson.
Eight touchdowns, five touchdowns. 35 receptions last year with three touchdowns as a receiver, 43 receptions the year before that, one touchdown.
And was it $12 million, I think, is his deal?
Mixon's at 12, and Cook is at 12.5, Derrick Henry 12.5. I would think that I agree with you, Dave. I would pay Chris Carson $12 million a year, but with Russ cooking, do you need a back the caliber of Chris Carson? And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I mean, he said in that interview, I do the most I can with the opportunities I get. It sounded like he felt like they maybe should have run the ball a little more last night. And so I don't know if he's necessarily on board with Russ cooking or not, but You look at his carries this year. He's got 61 carries through five games, so he's averaging around 12 a game. Last year through five games, he was averaging 18. So it's gone down, and yet they're throwing more to him. Kind of curious as to why Carson wasn't out there at all on the last drive, but it worked out with Travis Homer to block for blitzing linebackers and whatnot. So it worked out, but yeah, we'll see what they do with Carson. I think it's around, if I had to guess, it's probably around 50-50 on whether he comes back or not.
I'm just curious the number he may get. You know, we may all feel like, yeah, he deserves $12 million, he deserves $10, whatever that number is. But realistically, I'm wondering what the market is going to say. Because outside of those, you know, few guys we've talked about, whether it's McCaffrey, whether it's Kamara, whether it's, you know, Mixon, all we've heard about year in, year out is the devaluing of the running back position, right? Yeah. I mean, it seems to be true. So I'm just wondering, you know, as much as we think he's worth it, man, we hope he's back. What's somebody going to, whether it's the Seahawks or anybody else, what realistically do you think he's expecting to get?
Yeah, well, how about this? You got McCaffrey at the top of the list at 16, Kamara at 15, and then you drop down. I mean, you got Mixon at 12, Henry at 12, 12.5, Cook at 12.5. But then there's a gap between Mixon at 12 down to Kenyon Drake and Melvin Gordon at 8.5 and 8 million. I would think that Carson would be somewhere in between
10?
Mixon and Drake and Gordon.
I would, 10? You know, I didn't get the whole thing that he's, you know, not, he's worried about the opportunities or he was making a comment or anything like that. Because look, it's being replaced with targets. And by the way, the 23 targets that he's got so far, you know, puts him on a pace for, you know, roughly 75. And they wanted
well
to get 50
last year.
Yeah, so, and they're 47 last year was his, you know, they wanted to get him 50. So, but he's got, you know, 23 targets and 21 catches. So,
and
I mean, those
touchdowns.
Are. The, huh?
And three receiving touchdowns.
Right. So, and those are pretty high percentage throws. Plus, he's got great hands. So, they're kind of replacing it with that. And now you get him out in open space. He gets momentum going. I mean, I feel like that's not going to devalue him at all.
Well, we were talking early in the show when we opened the show talking about, you know, I lost hair. Your hair turned white. I mean, what these close games do to people. We had people texting in saying my Apple Watch was sending me warnings about my heart rate and all these different things. And then there's 69-year-old Pete Carroll, who loves him, who loves him. We'll let you hear what he had to say about it. Coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Skelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you guys have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and it becomes a radio right there for you. Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll check in on how Viking Sports Radio is doing after the loss.
That's a great call. I'll be interested to hear what's going on, because like I said, their opponents who have beaten them are 15-1.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the reaction is to that Zimmer. I saw a headline. I didn't click on the story, but I just saw a headline from Zimmer. It said, in talking about that play, saying I would do it again, the fourth down play. And I hope he sticks to his gun. It sounds like he will, because I think it was the right call based on what they had been doing all night. It'd be different if they were getting stuffed all night and then he elected to do that. Then you go, well, dude, why would you think you had different luck in during this play versus the entirety of the game leading up to it? You know, but
Seahawks did a good job on the play before that, too, don't you think? Because they had a gadget play that they kind of pitched it to Thielen in a misdirection, and he came around. It looked like he was going to be able to
That's
get
the play
first down.
I described earlier, where Mayoa and DeMontre Moore
came
hustling,
he held him,
flying over there. And then you asked about Diggs. On that play, the tackle kind of slipped away from him. But was it Thielen, Jim, I believe?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was fly sweep motion. And you know, those guys played it really well over there, but came flying down the Benson Mayoa came flying down the line, and he made a hit there that, you know, set up that fourth down play, and then he makes the play on the fourth down. So, but yeah, I agree. I think if you're a Viking fan, you're mad because it didn't work, obviously, and whatever didn't work is obviously the wrong call. But you got to look at it from the standpoint of, at that time, what did you think? And at that time, Rabel and I were talking about it. I'm like, if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm absolutely going for it right now.
And if they convert, game's over. Game's over. So, yeah, I think it was the right call. I wouldn't have a problem with that. Maybe there were other calls in the game they didn't like, but that one.
The call that was at the very end of the game, I thought they butchered that call. Because, I mean, they got it right with DeMontre Moore when it looked like it was an incomplete pass and they came back and it was actually a fumble and KJ recovered it in the third quarter.
Right.
But the one at the very end of the game where they came back and said it was a fumble, it looked like Cousins had his arm going forward. I don't think it would have mattered because Minnesota would have just gotten the ball with 5 seconds left at their own 35-yard line. But still, so I don't think there was too much made of that.
Whoever the analyst was, the guest official, he said it was a pass.
Oh, McCauley. I think Terry McCauley.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not sure. Yeah. You know, technically.
If there had been 30 seconds left, there would have been more made of it.
Yeah.
Hey, quickly before, I'm going to play this Pete Carroll sound in a moment, but one thing we didn't touch on was the play to DK Metcalf in the end zone before the ultimate touchdown. He caught the ball, broke the plane, and then had the ball knocked out. Now, I thought once you... That's the magic line. That's not like the 42-yard line or the 43-yard line. That's the magic line, the goal line. And that's once the ball breaks the plane,
yeah.
And he had possession. Now, is that still a spot on the field you need to make a football move? I thought that was a touchdown.
Well, the official closest to it called it a touchdown, and then the guy from the back of the end zone said no.
Yeah, so I thought I knew the rule on that, but apparently I don't.
Well, I think I referenced the replacement refs last night on the broadcast. I said, are these replacement refs? Because remember, that's what happened with the fail Mary.
Yeah, you had
one guy up, one guy down. This guy goes this way. This one goes that way.
So you and Rabel, did you think, upon further review, that should have been a touchdown? Or what was your guys' take on the
I thought we were both kind of going, I thought you come down, you make it. To me, it came down to, was it a football move? Which is a total judgment call, right?
But isn't that in the field of play?
I hate that football move stuff.
Well, how about the magical line?
Yeah.
That's why you don't fumble through the magical line.
I don't like that one either, Dave. You know that.
I do know that. That's why Bob called it a magical line. I thought that was interesting because Bob, you know, I think it seeped into his brain that he knows that you're wrong and that it's a magical place and that you should take care of the football.
But Metcalf on that play, let's say he had just made that same play on the 4-yard line, they wouldn't have given the completion to him there either.
Yeah, but the rules
are
different
in
the field of play there. But I don't know. It was just a weird play that didn't get much attention, but I was sitting there.
It certainly would have.
Yeah, but it all turned out well. Meanwhile, we talked about these close games and how taxing they can be for a fan, right? And you think about, again, 69-year-old Pete Carroll out there. He's got more energy than most, 39-year-olds I know. Says he likes these close games because they build the mentality of a great team.
The experience that these guys have, it just fortifies why they believe. You know, just adds on to why they should keep hanging and fighting tough and outlast the people that were playing. Because it's when you finish, you got to outlast the other guys. And that's what our guys understand, and they know it. And they're developing a discipline based on the experience and the confidence they're getting, because that's all we've been doing for 5 weeks now. And it's just going to make us that much stronger facing whatever the odds are, the issues are coming down the road. So this is all, it's just the process of building, the mentality of a really successful team.
I agree with that logic 1,000% that, they're not going to face a situation where they're going, well, we lost this one. I guess we'll pack it in. We got 2 minutes left in the game. We're down by 8 points. I mean, they've been there too many times already in 5 games to quit. At the same time, I'm guessing if you said, Pete, would you like a nice, comfortable win? He'd go, yeah, that might be preferable, where we could coast a bit, feel good about, hey, we got a double-digit lead with 3 minutes left, and we feel good about, without the anxiety or without the tension, as exciting as those games are. I'm guessing that'd be a relief, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, everybody, you'd love to have everything work, nothing go wrong. He's right about that, though. It's kind of like you're putting a check in your back pocket, or you're bottling a recipe, I guess. That you look around and know, hey, look, we know we can win these games. So when you're in that situation and down the road, yeah, we got this. We've done this before. But look, it's going to catch up to them. And not since what, 1972 has there been an undefeated team?
Yeah.
So, it's just incredibly difficult and so much harder now. So, it'll happen, but you know, whether or not it's sustainable, I'll say this. If you get in the playoffs, you're going to have tight games, and they're going to come down to it. Not so much, you know, every game, unless you're the Seahawks. But you know, think about how that was a coasting win in Atlanta. Did that feel like it, sort of?
Kind of.
38-25.
Comparatively speaking, Atlanta absolutely.
Atlanta had the ball trailing by 13, and they were, you know, they're still midway through the fourth quarter, and I forget what happened. Oh, they had a fourth down pass that went incomplete.
Yeah. Or and then they chucked one into the end zone or something like that. But anyway, that it does help you, you know, win those kinds of games. It's like practicing winning close games. It's tough. Sometimes people get in those situations and they kind of freeze up, and we know the Seahawks won't.
All right, coming up, how is everyone in Minnesota feeling today? We're going to check in on Viking Sports Radio after the loss. That's coming up next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Well, it was not a pleasant day for the Minnesota Vikings or their fans, right, Maura?
No, I don't think they enjoyed that. I think Kirk Cousins called it one of the toughest losses he's ever had.
So you were able to tap into KFAN out there and get a little sample of how they're feeling about things?
Yeah, we tried this a couple times toward the end of last year, so I wanted to keep it going. But I have to say, like, the Philadelphia fans and the San Francisco fans were a lot more whiny and mean. The Minnesota fans are so nice. Like, they're just like, oh, you know, I guess they should have gone for it on fourth. Maybe they could have kicked, too. They all seem very, like, well, it was just the coach's decision and... You know, what are you going to do?
Reasonable.
They're very nice. When I first tuned in, they were actually talking to a Minnesota Wild hockey goalie about chopping wood, which I felt seemed very Minnesota.
Sounds electric.
But getting into the game, I was surprised to learn in this first cut 21, that they apparently didn't have a Dave Wyman to preview the opponent and tell them who DK Metcalf was.
Defense was... as good as we've seen it in a long time. That looked like a throwback vintage Zim defense. I was about to say that looked like the 85 Bears defense. It was so dominant.
It was nice.
Seattle didn't even know what city they were in, and they were at home. And you can certainly say great function as of the artistry expressed on the field, displayed by Russell Wilson. And by, what's the name of this big wide receiver?
Oh, DK Metcalf?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He looks special. He's a second-year guy, they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Is he being sarcastic there?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
He says, well, he's got...
He said they tell me. That sounded like sarcasm.
He's got the highest average in the NFL. And if you're looking at Justin Jefferson, who was on their roster,
right.
You
or
probably
Curtis
notice.
Jefferson, as some call him.
Huh?
I said, or Curtis Jefferson, as some call him.
I thought, uh-oh, that... Was I saying it right?
No, you said it right.
Okay.
Others.
Yeah. Sometimes we get confused on those things. but, yeah, you would notice that. So I think he was being sarcastic. But I don't know. I like the choice of music underneath here, the bed.
That's Maura.
Way to go, Maura.
That's the...
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Creative
stylings
you said
of Maura Dooley.
Those Minnesota people were nice, and you're not very nice.
I'm playing loser underneath. Yeah, well, I mean... They're losers today, unfortunately. They said something also like they were having a purple... You know how we have Blue Friday? They were having like a blue-purple Monday is what they called it.
After the... Oh,
because the,
full of
I
sorrow.
I guess because they're sad.
It's a big bruise. Sounds like a giant bruise.
Yeah.
And then it was interesting to me just to see the difference in how... In the belief in quarterback, because apparently they didn't think that was a fumble at the end of the game here in Cut 22. But they don't think Kirk Cousins really would have done anything anyways.
I'm not even mad at that, even though I thought his arm was clearly moving forward, Ron.
Yep.
We weren't going to do anything with it. I hate to be a fatalist at that point. How dare I?
Yeah, he's not Michael Vick. He's not throwing it 80 yards.
It wasn't going to happen.
It wasn't going to happen, Jim. They're not mad about it. They're like,
nah. Well, I'd be the same way. I mean, they're on 35. If they'd had 10 seconds, they maybe could have gotten to Seattle's 35 and gotten Bailey out there for another 52-yarder to try and win the game. But I think there would have only been 5 or 6 seconds left, just time enough for one play and not time enough to – I mean, he couldn't have heaved a Hail Mary to the end zone.
So Tennessee's 3-0. We're 5-0. Indy's lost, I think, two games. I want to say their opponents are like 16-2 now. So it's not like in Minnesota, it's like, wow, we just got beat by the Jets, Jaguars, and Giants.
Right.
I mean, it's Green Bay, Tennessee, Indy, and Seattle. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty good team. I like their coach.
Well, I do, too. You're not used to being 1-4 in Minnesota, though.
Yeah. And they've got good. They've got some good players. They've just, you know, their defense. I mean, look, they had. I don't even know why we're talking about Minnesota. I'll let it go. But they had Danielle Hunter.
They were Everson the opponent Griffin. Last night.
They have Linval Joseph, Anthony Barr, Xavier Rhodes, Trey Waynes. I mean, going into this game, it's like their corners go third year, rookie, second year, rookie, rookie, third year. And then the third year guy gets hurt. Holton Hill, he's out. Chris Boyd, second year guy, he's out. You got a bunch of rookies out there. They actually didn't do too bad, at least the first half. You think those rookies are out there going, man, we're facing like the most prolific offense in all of the NFL, and we're shutting them down,
yeah,
man.
They were having their way.
I wouldn't. If I were a Vikings fan, I would have been pleased with the defense last night. The 21 points the Seahawks scored in the third quarter, all short fields. I mean, one of them, Seattle started on their own 42, but the rest of them were pretty deep in Minnesota territory.
You got one here, Mark?
Yeah, the last thing that I heard consistently throughout all the shows is that they weren't so mad that they went for it on fourth, but I don't know if you guys saw it. Maybe it's because they're in Minnesota and that's what they're watching for. They say that Alexander Mattison had a huge hole that he missed if he would have gone to the left, and that they think Dalvin Cook could have gotten that. But this one in particular from Eric Norquist and Ron Johnson, they had an interesting way of describing the path he should have taken.
The play call was on.
The play call worked.
We're looking at the film over and over and over again, and the coach, for anybody who's ever been in a football meeting room, that coach is going to have that clicker and that red beam. He's going to rewind that probably 15 times to go over and over and over and show him eyes up, vision to the back of CJ Ham's butt crack. When you see him collide, there you can see with your peripheral vision, there's a huge hole outside. Everybody crashed in. You bounce it outside. And he didn't do it.
So it's the backup's fault.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm looking at it. I mean, I get what he means here, but if you're Madison, you also don't want to do anything that's going laterally.
No.
And that's, you know,
because it was fourth and what was it?
What was it?
Wasn't like a full yard.
Yeah, it wasn't a yard. Was it half yard? I mean, were we talking 6 inches? I mean, maybe.
They keep saying it was a half yard on the Vikings.
So 18 inches. Yeah, I mean, you feel like you can just fall forward and get that. But yeah, I see what he means. I'm looking at the play right now. I mean, there's a spot out there, but that takes time to get out there. You know, you don't know if maybe Cody Barton, he kind of owned CJ Ham. I mean, people are mixed reviews on Cody, and I'm not sure exactly what everybody's looking at. I'll just say this. I love the way he takes on blockers. I love it. I wish everybody did that. So he really does a good job, and he may have made a play outside, but I don't think it's for sure. If this guy bounces it outside, he gets it. But, you know, you want to stay north-south. You don't want to go lateral at all. So I'm not really faulting the running back there if I'm in Minnesota.
Well, especially if he does go that direction and gets stopped, people are going, dude, it was 18 inches. All you got to do is literally lean forward. Exactly. Why didn't you do that? I mean, it's Monday morning quarterback. That's what it is, right?
Well, and here's the other argument I would say. There was a gap opening up there. But it's just that Cody stoned the fullback so hard that he got pushed back in. And then Benson Mayoa, as I said, one of the more heroic plays I've seen. I mean, you talk about giving everything you got. He gets off the ball great. He gets good pressure. And then he sees the ball going back in the gap behind him and just basically throws his body. It's like a guy in the war movies that throws himself on the grenade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was Cody. Or that was Mayoa.
That was Mayoa. Oh.
Yeah.
Boy, Maura's right about how nice they are in sports radio there in Minnesota.
Yeah,
don't they have a guy? Really, they have a guy
they
like me,
like apologizing for having negative feelings.
Don't they have a guy like me there who's like whining about everything. And man, they need a new defensive coordinator. They should have stopped him there.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
he's
it
on
put our
show.
Complaints into context.
How come they didn't talk like the people on Fargo?
A couple of them did.
A couple of them did. Do you get some bars? What's the?
She was going ice fishing at Mille Lacs.
Yeah.
That hobby hillbilly they were talking to about wood chopping. He talked like that.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
What you got there, hon? Some Arby's?
Oh, thank you, hon. Yeah. Okay. Well, good stuff there. So a little taste of how things are going in Minnesota. They seem to be okay. I think they feel okay about things. And Philly, there would have been picketing in the streets, riots going on, torches, the whole thing. There would have been screaming for the head of the head coach and the GM and the owner and get them all out of here.
Well, and in the stadium, they would have piped in the booze.
Yeah, that's so great. So great.
And I don't mean B-O-O-Z-E.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we'll talk more football with the professor, John Clayton. That's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
The knowledge was definitely flowing today. I feel that. I'm right, aren't I, Maura?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. What did we learn today?
First off, we learned the professor's theory on why Adam Gase's players don't want to come to him with their issues.
You know, Le'Veon Bell, the relationship continues to get worse there. First, Le'Veon was trying to prove it to Adam. It's like, hey, I'm tough. I can play through a hamstring injury. He stays out five plays, gets the hamstring hurt, goes on injured for 3 weeks. And then yesterday, I think Adam only used him like about 14, 15 times in the game as far as carries. And so Le'Veon Bell tweets out how upset he was with the lack of carries. And then all Adam goes, I don't understand these guys. Today it's like, you know, they why don't they come up and talk to me? Well, maybe they don't like you.
I wouldn't use Le'Veon Bell as the gauge for how likable Gase is, true. Because he's, man, talk about just a terrible deal for that team, a malcontent who's produced little to nothing.
You know, did you see, like, the last few times that I've seen him, because of the whole googly eye thing, he's got he's got his grin pulled way down. He won't let anybody. Like, he'll pull his mask up over his eyes sometimes.
Googly eyes.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like he's self-conscious about it a little bit.
I don't remember him being like that before that press conference, though.
Yeah.
I don't either. They were 7-9 last year, so they were halfway decent, but it sure seems like he's lost a team this year.
I don't know about you guys, but my mom used to say, you know, when you'd make a face, that she'd say, you better watch it or your face will stick that way.
It's stuck that way.
And that's what happened to Adam Gase. My mom was right.
His face has been stuck ever since he made that look. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm just surprised he's outlasted Atlanta. Atlanta was competitive in some of their losses. Yeah. Now, they were dramatic losses, but they were competitive. The Jets look like roadkill. Right. They look terrible. Like, nothing good is happening in New York with the Jets, or the Giants, for that matter. But the fact that he's still there is a minor miracle. What else did we learn, Maura?
Well, we learned that limbs facing the wrong direction don't faze Wyman.
That part, looking at that, those don't bother me anymore. Ever since I looked down and saw my own knee going, well, my foot was like going northwest, and then it was like angled to the side, kind of.
I like the direction on northwest.
Yeah. I mean, if you look down, your foot's supposed to go north. It was... Yeah, northwest. Anyway.
Hey, and then I ended up in the northwest.
Yeah, there you go.
And here I was down in Arizona, University of Arizona.
Your foot was really more of a compass.
Followed your foot.
Followed my foot.
That was stupid,
though, because it does bother me. It bothers me.
Yeah, but are you horrified by the sight of it? Because I've seen it. Listen, I'm a massive MMA fan, as you know, and I used to show those videos to Groz all the time. And he'd go, why are you showing me that? Goodness. You know, but I'm really not fazed by it. But if you show me a video that Brock likes of somebody popping a zit, I'm going to throw up.
Oh. Why would Brock show you that? What?
Because he's weird. He was showing it to everybody in the sports pit one day. And he's like, Bob, come on here. Take a look at this. And it was, I don't know where he got the video, but I literally was like a dry heave. I was like, oh, no. Yeah. But I can watch. I don't enjoy seeing people get hurt that way, but it doesn't. Yeah. It almost looks fake to me, so it doesn't really register. It's like watching a movie or something. Like, oh, somebody gets blown up. You're just kind of numb to it, maybe. Maybe I've watched too many violent movies, and I'm just numb to it.
Yeah. Well, you're probably just used to it. And I guess, yeah, it still bothers me because I kind of go through the horror of what, you know, Dak Prescott's sitting there with his, you know, foot pointing the wrong way. And it's
like, was just a cramp.
You know, huh?
It was just a cramp.
Yeah. You know that, like, it's going to take a while. Like, yeah. I was on the other sideline, so the trainers came over, and then they waved the doctors over, and, you know, it's a 53 and a third yard run to get over there, so I was probably sitting there for 2 minutes in just excruciating pain until they popped it back in. But, so that part kind of comes up, but I don't want to look at it. Like, if somebody says, you want to see this, this is really gross, yeah. I'm like, eh, that's okay.
That's the part that would get me, them popping it back in. That would probably gross me out.
Oh, really?
Seeing the injury, I'm like, whoa. I mean, it's sort of jarring, but I'm not nauseous.
Yeah, that almost seems like it would hurt worse than the injury.
Yeah. Do you think they did that? Because they said he had a compound fracture and a dislocated ankle. So do you think they popped it back in there?
I'm not sure. I wonder if
they put that air cast on.
Yeah. I wonder if they pulled on it, maybe. I know that was the biggest sense or feeling of relief that I've ever had in my life.
When they put it back
in. When they put it back in.
Wow.
So,
what do you think when they blur it out? I saw a replay today and they had the ankle blurred out on Prescott.
Oh, where it's all pixelated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't handle it, or?
Well, not everybody watching can handle it, I guess, right?
They're getting soft. But then on the other hand, like, do we want to show this over and over and over again?
Yeah, it seems like gratuitous on some level.
Yeah. Maybe.
But often they would warn you, like, hey, if you're saying, avert your eyes here. This is rough. You know, I think that's all that's necessary. A little heads up.
Yeah.
You know, turn away. If this kind of thing gets to you, you're not going to want to see this. Mm-hmm. What else did we learn, Maura?
We learned why Chris Carson doesn't do touchdown celebrations.
So that's just how I am. I mean, a lot of people always ask, like, why don't you ever show emotion? A lot of times I'm just so tired when I get to the end zone that I'm like, okay, I'm ready to get back to the sit down. So that's a big part of it, too.
I love that answer. Too tired, man. Did all that to get into the end zone. I don't have time to dance or cartwheels or any of that nonsense.
It's kind of how he walks around, too. I was talking about, you know, when we go out to the buses,
yeah.
that story. And it looks like the way he kind of moves around, it looks like he's conserving his energy.
Yeah.
And then he gets on the field and just lets it all loose. So, yeah, just keep doing that, Chris. But I love that. Like, Jim, you mentioned, or Bob, Barry Sanders.
Yep.
You know, that to me is
my favorite all-time running back.
That goes a long way. He was not my favorite, Barry Sanders.
I bet. He's probably a nightmare.
Played against him a couple times. But yeah. I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to play. He's like an athletic Nigerian nightmare.
Christian Okoye. Oh.
Yeah. He is. He's more athletic, but you know, Okoye would run you over. There's another guy there, Barry Word, who is,
oh yeah, from
he was 248.
How big was Okoye? Was he 240-ish, 250?
Both those guys were like 6'2", 250. Yeah. So, and Carson, what is he, 6'1", probably 230,
yeah.
225. But, man, he's got so much more speed.
He's a lean dude. When you see him in the locker room, he looks like one of those, you know, 3% body fat guys.
Yeah.
Like Jim.
It's kind of like Jim.
Yeah, like me. This won't shock you at all, but I do appreciate guys who just hand the ball to the official. I'm okay with the celebrating. That's fine. But I have a soft spot in my heart for the guys that just say, oh, I scored. Well, here's the ball for you.
I'm
Mr.
with you.
Official, sir.
I'm with you. I like that. I can't stand the first down thing. I don't care who does it.
Yeah.
Every time they do it, they come up with a first down. They drop. Dalvin Cook was doing it last night where he dropped the ball. George Kittle does the, you know, enough.
Yeah. I also like when some of those guys will go back and hug their offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, because they're the ones that got them there. So that's always a good move. The one touchdown I scored, I acted like I had never been there before because I'd never been there before.
What'd you do?
It was my one and only. I was just
like
jumping
Gooding
around
Jr.
like a crazy man. I was holding it up, and I was like, ah!
We got to get video of that.
Yeah. And there's a picture on one of my football cards, I think, where I'm holding up a ball up in the air, and that's it. That's the one time. But I had teammates that would, like, You know, you go running out there to congratulate them, and all of a sudden they start doing the skipping thing and jumping jacks and then running the other way. And then I just turn around and just wave my hand. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll talk to you later.
He's busy right now.
I'm not going to go chase you down just to celebrate with you.
Do we learn anything else, Maura?
No, that's all we learned today.
All right. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Chris Carson. It was a great conversation. If you missed any of that, head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. Click the podcast button. Click on our picture. And it's all right there waiting for you each and every day. We'll be back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.